Sugihontu, sisters and brothers in the Dhamma. today I'd like to present to you or discuss with you a sutta I like very much, and yet it's very, very profound, but it's very striking, opening the eyes, and to me, it's so beneficial. Therefore, I choose this sutta to share with you. This is Markandeya Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya 75. I believe some of you have read this sutta before come online. Then you may find it very difficult. But after this presentation, you may find it very easy and beneficial. Okay, and this sutta is divided into two portions or two aspects. The first aspect is about how perception, how our perverted perception blind us and thinking that sensual pleasure is enjoyable. And the second aspect is how the mind, how our mind cheat us, thinking the five aggregate of our mind and body is pure, beautiful, that further cause clinging to the mind and body. So before I go into detail, let us pay homage to the Buddha first. Okay, everybody, please raise your palm. I will recite your ceremony. How you recite it in your heart. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. Okay, so the sutta start. Thus have I heard, Ewangme Sutta. All the sutta start with this. That is, who heard that? Ananda. Thus have I heard, Ananda heard that from the teaching of the Buddha, from the Buddha. So at one time, the Lord was living among the Kurus, the market town of the Kurus called Kammasadhamma. This Kurus town or Kammasadhamma, the villagers there are highly intelligent because the most famous sutta in the Theravada teaching, which is Satipatthana Sutta, Satipatthana Sutta, is also preached in Kurus or Kammasadhamma. So, and this Sutta, Markandeya Sutta, is also very profound. Satipatthana Sutta is also very profound. So both of these suttas are preached in Kurus, simply because the Kurus people are very, how to call it, wise and highly intelligent. So at that time, Buddha living on a spread of grass. You see, he lived so simply, just some grass. Then he can sleep already. Because a person whose mind is pure, devoid of lust, has no fear. Therefore, Buddha can stay everywhere as he likes. So while seeing the sleeping place of the Buddha, Markandeya. Markandeya is not a Buddha's disciple, it's an ascetic from other sect. So Markandeya complained that he had seen the poor sight of Gotama. the destroyer of growth. So, because when Buddha appeared in the world, you know, other schools out of the Buddha's teaching, you know, lost a lot of followers. Therefore, they treated Buddha like an enemy. So they say, oh, Buddha is a destroyer of growth. So what is a destroyer of growth? And then Buddha asked him, Magandhiya, the eye that finds pleasure in forms, that delights in forms, that rejoices in forms, that has been tamed, guarded, protected, and restrained by the Tathagata. And he teaches the Dhamma for its restraint. Not only the eyes. When we talk about a restraint, we talk about restraint of six sense. Restraint of six senses. So now I give eye as an example. Okay. Then was it in reference to that you said, Gotama, the contemplative is a destroyer of growth? So Buddha asked him, because I teach control your senses. Don't let loose of senses. Because of that, you told I am a destroyer of growth. So Magandhiya said yes. So in this way, we can see, or we can see Magandhiya from other sectarian, from other sect, from other school. They promote enjoying senses. They promote that we should let loose the senses and let the eye find pleasures in form, let the ear find pleasures in sound, and so on. So what? This is their teaching. Therefore, when Buddha teach restraint of the senses, they consider Buddha is a destroyer of growth. So let us see how the senses, how our senses enjoy the sense object. When talk about the six senses, they are eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. And when talking about six sense object, then the eye delights in form. Form is, like visible object, what the eye can see. For example, the eye can see, can watch video, they can watch, scenery, external scenery, they can watch men, female, they can see whatever things you like to see. It's called forms. So eye delights in form. Then the ear delights in sound. Nose delight in smell. The tongue delights in taste. We all know, most people have strong craving for the taste. So they spend, three meals, four meals, even in dinner, supper, just to enjoy, satisfy the tongue, because tongue delights in taste. Ear also same. Our ear like to listen to music, like to listen to, pleasant speech, especially those who praise us. We like very much. So the ear like to hear things, to hear sound. And the body, delights in tangible. Especially the touch of opposites. The touch of your beloved son and daughter, and the touch of your boyfriend, the touch of the opposites. And also any fine material that the body can touch. Okay. And my delight in mental state. To me, among all these five senses, my delight in mental states is a greatest craving. It's a greatest it's a greatest attachment. And we may not even know that. Huh? For example, mind has greatest delight in the mental state, like our expectation for future, right? We always expect something good to happen in the future. And we have a lot of daydreaming, especially we can dream what we cannot achieve in this life, right? And we have a lot of illusion, imagination. We take delight in it. And we have strong delight in identification that mental state is myself. Now, I am the thinker. Right? When we think something, then something very hardcore creative or something good, then you say that I am the thinker. So we have strong delight in identification that my thinking is myself, right? That delight, many people don't even know that. And we even, human beings, even get caught in one's mental state like fear, right? When fear arises, we keep thinking of it, we keep grasping of it, we keep attached to it as myself, 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 myself. So although fear is an unwholesome mental state, but because of that identification, the mind get caught in it. Similarly, the worry, when one worries for something, then one get caught in the worry and keep worrying, worrying, worrying. This also type of delights, you know? We don't even know that, right? And then when somebody have depression, then the mind start to create a lot of illusion, a lot of imagination, a lot of unreal things. And mind get caught in it, and the mind delight in it. And all this one make themselves suffer even more, simply because the mind delight in the mental state. And in fact, all mental states are like passing cloud in the sky, right? They come and go, come and go, come and go. But because we delight in the mental state, we delight in what the mind thinks, we delight in all the creation of the mind, therefore, we get caught. When we get caught, then we develop a craving, attachment, even identification of that state as myself. Then we end up in, misery, right? So, therefore, among all these six senses, delighting in six sense object, to me, and to many people, maybe body delight in tangible, for example, opposite sex, or having sex with opposite sex. So this is a very strong desire for human beings. Therefore, they can, then the generation pass from one generation to another generation. But to me, the mind, or to many people, they don't even know that the mind has strongest delight in mental states. And when mind has stronger delights in mental state, then the mind get caught in the mental state. And further, the mind identify those mental state, especially the unwholesome one, as myself, then end up in endless suffering. Okay? For this reason why Buddha say, we have to practice restraint of the senses. We don't let, because when eye delights in form, then the eyes will keep chasing after the beautiful form, and that is unwholesome karma. So similarly, when the ear delights in sound, and it will create unwholesome karma. When the nose delight in smell, the tongue delight in taste again and again, so unwholesome karma is accumulated day after day whenever you taste food, right? And body delight in tangible, whenever there's delight, there is unwholesome karma, whether it's whether in our mental state, our body, or speech. And as we know, unwholesome karma paved the way to unwholesome result. Unwholesome karma give rise to unwholesome result. Then we end up in misery. For this reason, why Buddha said we have to practice restraint of the senses. Okay. Then when Magandhiya, the Buddha asked Magandhiya, do you think because I say restraint of senses, then you say I am the destroyer of growth? Then Magandhiya said, yes. Why? Because it is handed down in a discourse of ours. So this is something I want to say here. You know, when something is handed down in a discourse, we shouldn't, should we believe it completely? Or should we investigate first and check with our own experience whether it's correct or not? Right? If we believe 100% what is handed down in the discourse, then this is simply faith-based, faith-oriented. But if we investigate now what is handed down in our discourse through our own practical experience and see whether it's correct or not, then it's based on wisdom. It's called wisdom-oriented. In this way, because Magandhiya simply believed what the discourse say, that Buddha is a destroyer of the growth. So I think most people simply believe what the discourse say. Therefore, Buddha give a talk, give Kalama Sutta. Kalama Sutta Buddha say, do not accept things just because they are being repeated or come from tradition, come from scriptures, come from rumor, come from your guess. Your guess is correct, or come from your rational, or come from incorrect reasoning. Or sometimes it comes from the bias towards the certain subject. Therefore, Buddha said, when you know for yourself that something leads to a harm and sorrow and is not welcomed by the wise, then abandon it. But if it's opposite, then accept it. Okay, so this is the importance of investigation mind. Okay, don't simply believe what the discourse say. And Magandhiya make the same mistake. Okay, this is nothing to do with our topic today, but I just want to add some extra information for you about this Kalama Sutta. Okay, then Buddha start to teach, start to give very good example to Magandhiya. Then Buddha said, Magandhiya, suppose that there was a leper covered with sores and infections, devoured by worms, picking the scabs of the opening of his wounds with his nails, then cauterizing his body over a pit of glowing embers, and he found satisfaction. If this thing, if we put our hand, in a fire, we will feel burning, hot, and suffering, right? But for a leper, because his hand is covered with sores and infection, so he need to put his hand in the fire. When he put his hand in the fire, to our surprise, he found satisfaction. We found suffering, but he found satisfaction. Okay? So this, to him, this is a satisfaction for this leper. Then Buddha continued to say, then this leper's friend would take him to a doctor. And then the doctor would prepare medicine for him and thanks to the medicine. he would be cured of his leprosy and become well and happy, free. Now he's free already. And he's the master of himself. He going wherever he like. Then suppose two strong men having grabbed him with their arms were to drag him to a pit of glowing embers. What do you think? Wouldn't he twist his body this way and that? So what's your answer? After he recover from the leprosy, so now somebody want to drag him to a fire. Then do you think that he will twist his body this way and that? Surely we will say yes, right? Right? But why? Why? Then Magandhya answered, yes, Master Gotama. He will twist his body in that way and this way and that way. Don't want to come close to the fire. But why is that? Because the fire is painful to be touched, very hot and scorching. That is Magandhya's answer. Then Buddha asked him again, now, what do you think, Magandhya? Is the fire painful to the touch, very hot and scorching only now? Or was it also that way before? Buddha asked him this because before that, the leper approached to the fire and burned his hand. Burn his hand with the fire, and he found satisfaction. But now, after recover, he didn't want to approach the fire anymore. So Buddha asked him, do you think the fire is painful to the touch, very hot and scorching only now? Or was it also that way before? I think all of us were already know the answer, right? Then Buddha said, Magandhya said, yes, it's hot before and now. So Buddha said that, Magandhya, this fire is like sensual pleasures. So sensual pleasures in the past were painful to the touch, very hot and scorching. And sensual pleasures in the future will be painful to the touch, very hot and scorching. Sensual pleasure is like fire. So sensual pleasures at present are painful to the touch, very hot and scorching. Right? So now another important question for you to think about. Why do we not feel that sensual pleasure is hot and painful to the touch? Buddha says sensual pleasure is hot and painful to the touch in the past, also in the future, also at present. This is the awakened people, enlightened people's discovery, that sensual pleasure is hot in the past, in the future, and at present. But why? Why do we not feel that sensual pleasure is hot and painful to the touch? What do you think? If you have answer, you can click your audio and give me your answer. Nobody want to try, is it? Okay. So for the leper, right? Before, then we see what the Markandeya answered better, huh? And why I, you know, why I hold this question for so long, because I want you to think about it deeply. Okay, so Markandeya told the Buddha, for the labor, because his faculties were impaired, which was why, even though the fire was actually painful to the touch, but he had a perverted perception of pleasant. But now he recovered already, right? He recovered from leprosy. His faculty is his faculties are not impaired anymore. Therefore, he has no more perverted perception that fire is pleasant. Huh? Therefore, he afraid of to be burned by the fire. And now we come to another important question. Why are beings attached to sensual pleasure? Although Buddha told us sensual pleasures in the past is painful to touch, in the future is painful to touch, at present also very painful to touch, right? But why are beings attached to sensual pleasure? You see, here people are, you know, enjoying eating wine, enjoying drinking alcohol. Then you see another one enjoying opposite touch. They want to be close to each other. They want to be attached to each other. So why are beings attached to sensual pleasure? Although sensual pressure is painful to the touch and hot. Again, do you have the answer? If you have the answer, can you open your audio and let me know? Anybody want to answer?
Due to ignorance.
Ignorance is very, how to call it? Of course, ignorance is the root cause of all, but we want more precise answer.
Because of perfection, perception of pleasant.
Yeah, good, excellent. Because previously we already give you the answer. Why the leper after recover from the leprosy, then he do on the fire. Before that, you know, he light the fire, he put his hand on the fire. Because at that time, he has the perverted perception of pleasant. Simply, in the same way, why are beings attached to the sensual pleasure? Although sensual pleasure is painful to the touch and hot. Because human beings have the perverted perception. We call a wrong perception or perverted perception of sensual pleasure being pleasant. It's our perverted or wrong perception of sensual pleasure being pleasant. Therefore, we attach to sensual pleasure. Just like the labor has the perverted perception that fire is pleasant. Therefore, he put his hand in the fire in order to get satisfaction. Similarly, we attach to sensual pleasures because we have the perverted perception, thinking that sensual pleasure is pleasant. Therefore, we chase after sensual pleasures, although it is hot, painful to touch, according to what Buddha what Buddha said. Then another question, another more important question comes. Why do beings have the perverted perception, sensual pleasure being pleasant? Right? Why? Why we think differently? Why we have that perverted perception? We only perceive sensual pleasures is pleasant. What do you think? What's your answer?
Because our faculties were impaired.
What type of faculty? That refer to leper, huh? But now our faculty are good, right? We are healthy, right? Why?
Is it due to because we are avijja, ignorance?
Every time when we say about the avijja, it's correct because avijja is the root cause of all. But we want more precise answer.
Is it
not seeing things as they really are?
You keep saying until you get the correct answer.
Social conditioning. Galay, what about social conditioning from young?
Okay, some more.
Don't have
wrong
the
view.
Right view. The experience is pleasant.
Deluded. The self-identity view.
Okay, none of you give me the precise answer I want, but all your questions also have also correct, but not as precise as I want.
Due to anatta. Is it anatta, non-self?
Due to non-self, how can we have the pleasant, the perception of pleasant? No. Okay, let's see the answer, what Buddha say. Because beings are not free from passion for sensual pleasures. Devoured by sensual craving, burning with sensual fever. Their faculties are impaired, which is why, even though sensual pleasures are actually painful to the touch, they have the perverted perception of pleasant. We always say that we have three poisons, right? Ignorance, greed, and anger, right? So in deep inside our heart, we have this passion we call raga. Raga or loba, passion or greed or lust. Deep in our heart, we have this greed or passion or lust. And this passion, lust, and greed need to be fulfilled, need to be satisfied, need to be, satiated, need to be fulfilled. So when this, the urge, when the urge from the passion, from the lust, raga, loba, the urge, when the urge come out from the depth of your heart, then immediately it covered the mind, it clouded your perception. Then your perception will think that, sensual pleasure is very pleasant because there's an inner urge, there's an inner need from the passion, the inner lust that come very, very come from the depth of your heart that is coming up to the surfaces that you want. For example, when you are very, very hungry, there's an inner lust, inner desire for the food. So at that time, you will think, food is so pleasant, right? Then because of that inner passion, inner lust that covered or clouded, or blind your perception, then your perception will misperceive that, food is so pleasant. Food is so pleasant. Similarly, when there's an urge for women and men, when there's an urge for sex, right? When there's an urge for sex, then that passion, that lust, that greed will arise in you and cover your perception and make you cannot see very clearly, and you will think that I need to fulfill my sexual urge. Then you will think that sexual urge, the sexual enjoying sex is very pleasant. But for the noble one, for the Buddha, it's very repulsive, right? Because they have no more patience. But for ordinary person who is not yet anagami, this inner patience, inner desire, inner lust, when it comes out, it will make your perception misperceived. When it's misperceived, it becomes perverted perception and thinking that, oh, sensual pleasure is very pleasant. Then your action will chase after the sensual pleasure, because your mind already think that it is very pleasant. Huh? Seeing the visible object, seeing the woman is very pleasant. Having sex is very pleasant. Huh? Then eating is very pleasant. Having an opposite touch is very pleasant. So when you think in that way, of course, your action will follow what you think. Right? That's why, mano pubagama dhamma, mind is a foreigner. So the answer is that, simply because we have this strong passion in our heart. We're not yet eradicated. Huh? We are not Arya, right? We are not an anagami. So we still have passion or raga or loba or greed in the heart. Is it clear to you? So when we are devout, devoured by this sensual craving, we are burning with this sensual fever. At that time, then we cannot see things clearly already, right? So we cannot see sensual pleasures are actually painful to the touch. We cannot see already, but what we see is sensual pleasures are so pleasant to the touch, right? Simply because we are burned with sensual fever, we are burned with sensual craving, and because we are not free from the passion, therefore we misperceive that sensual pleasures are pleasant to the touch, not painful to the touch. And this is called perverted perception. Okay, then we come to a question. Having known sensual pleasures is painful to the touch in the past, in the future, at the present. Then how did Buddha get rid of his craving for sensual pleasures? Now we accept what Buddha say, sensual pleasures is painful to the touch. We also want to get rid of our craving for sensual pleasures, right? So, okay, how should we do it? We have, already 40 minutes. Shall we stop here for 10 minutes before I go into how to get rid of it? Because that's very important part. Okay, let us stop for 10 minutes. Just now I did mention Buddha, when he was prince, he enjoyed sensual pleasures. This is the satisfaction of sensual pleasures. Okay, then how later he renounced the world? Then Buddha said, but after a time, having known the coming to be and passing away of sensual pleasures. So after he enjoyed like 16, from the 16 years he married, right? Then he enjoyed until 28 years old. So having known the coming to be and passing away of sensual pleasures, so he understand all the sensual pleasures is impermanent also, they come and go, okay? Then having known the satisfaction, because he himself already enjoyed the, enjoy the highest satisfaction from the sensual pleasure. But he also know the danger of them, the danger of enjoying too much sensual pleasures. And finally, he find a way to escape from the sensual pleasures. That's why he said, having known the coming to be and passing away of sensual pleasures, the satisfaction, the danger of them, and the escapes as it really is, I get rid of the craving for sensual pleasures. Okay, so in order to get rid of the enjoyment of the sensual pleasures, or in order to get rid of the craving for sensual pleasures, there are three aspects that we all have to know. One is the satisfaction. This satisfaction we all experience it ourselves. For example, when you eat the food that you like, you have the satisfaction, right? But, or when you, you know, have the opposite touch, then you have the satisfaction. But is there any danger? Although sensual pleasures bring the satisfaction, but any danger? For example, when you eat the good food, you feel so satisfied. Will it cause you want to eat more and more, more and more? Sure, right? That's why the obesity become a new symptom of the modern world, especially in the West, America. So many people, when I first came to America, I said, wow, why so many fat people? So when I enter into a restaurant, they bring up a big plate of the food, which I can eat for 2 days, but they eat one meal only. So from that, you understand, this is the danger of, they enjoy the satisfaction. At the same time, there is a danger hidden in the satisfaction, because it causes greed to arise more and more. It causes more greed, more desire, and more lust, more craving. So there is the danger of sensual pleasures. However, we only see the aspect one. We only see the satisfaction. We just want to fulfill our satisfaction. We forget the danger. However, for some wise people, when they enjoy satisfaction, for example, the Buddha, before he became Buddha, Prince Siddhartha, so he enjoys so luxurious sensual pleasures. He has the satisfaction. But after enjoying the sensual pleasures, for wise person, they feel very lonely. The heart is very empty. After enjoying sensual pleasures, the heart becomes very empty. For ordinary person, the craving will increase after enjoying sensual pleasures, after feeling the satisfaction. But for wise person, after fulfilling the sensual pleasures, they feel very empty, just like what Buddha, just like what Yasa. Yasa, after enjoying sensual pleasures, he feels so empty. That's why he ran out from all the women. He see all the women are lying on the bed, lying on the floor with all these ugly faces. So he feels so disgust. Unlike other people, they feel the woman so beautiful, so enticing. But he feels so disgust, and he ran out from the house looking for the escape. Looking for the escape. Similarly, Prince Siddhartha also said, after 28 years, he said, enough for me, because his heart is so empty. His heart is so, is very unhappy because he already finds sensual pleasures cannot give him real happiness. I have read one book. They are billionaire, it's a banker, he got so many business, and he got three sons. Two of them committed suicide. Living in such a rich family, why they want to commit suicide? Simply because they cannot find real happiness. Although they are, surrounded by all sensual pleasures, by the money, woman, everything, whatever they want, they can get it. But that's not real happiness. So they feel so empty and depressed. Finally, they commit suicide. Same as the Buddha. So when the Buddha, you know, feel so much emptiness, there's no real happiness, he start to find escape. Escape from the sensual pleasures. This is the third aspect. The escape. So what is the escape? So Prince Siddhartha renounced the world. He went to the forest and meditate. So there are two ways to escape. First is to practice Samatha meditation. When you practice Samatha meditation, when you have the good concentration, the mind, you know, let's say anapanasati, the mind stay with the breath or stay with the nimitta. The mind is so peaceful. At that time, you feel this the real happiness, real calm, real peace. So then the mind will not chase after outside the sensual pleasure that impinge the senses. No. So from concentration practice, if you achieve third jhana, let's say, third jhana, Buddha say, the pleasures in the third jhana surpass all human pleasures. The pleasures in the third jhana, the happiness in the third jhana surpass all sensual pleasure in human realm. In human realm. So this is one escape. The second escape is after you attain some concentration, you move to vipassana. So you move to vipassana, you see the sensual pleasures, whatever come to your eye, come and go, impermanent. Whatever come to your ear, whether it's pleasant sound or unpleasant sound, if you contemplate impermanent, you come to realize it comes and go. Whatever come to your nose, whatever food come to your tongue, if you can contemplate impermanent, then you come, you see that pleasant feeling triggered by the food is also arising and passing away, arising and passing away. So whatever come to the bodily touch, if you are mindful and contemplate impermanent, you will also see pleasant comes and go, it's not permanent. So whatever come to your mind, if you don't cling to it as myself, whatever come to your mind, whether it's unpleasant one or pleasant one, even the fear, you contemplate it as come and go, gone, impermanent, vanishing, then it goes away. Right? Then there's the escape. Escape from enjoying your thought. Escape from indulging in the thought that make it real. Right? When you indulge in your thought, it make your thought real. In fact, the fear is arising and passing away, but you indulge in it, you attach to it, that's why it becomes real. And when it becomes real, then it affects your body, right? So the escape is to keep contemplating impermanence of the arising object that appear in the six senses. Then when the time, when wisdom reach maturity, then you attain Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, the time you deeply, permanently uproot the inner patience, the inner lust, the inner greed that is in your heart. This is the escape. This is how Buddha, you know, through the concentration and vipassana practice, he escaped from the sensual craving for the sensual pleasures. Then Buddha said, I dwelt devoid of thirst. Thirst means craving. I dwelt devoid of thirst or craving. My mind inwardly calm because he had got rid of sensual craving for sensual pleasures. That's why his heart, his mind inwardly calm. Then I saw other beings not yet devoid of attachment to sensual pleasures like us, who were pursuing sensual pleasures. They were being consumed by craving for sensual pleasures, burning with the fever for sensual pleasures. And Buddha said, I did not envy them. I had no delight therein. Because Buddha, you know, Buddha stay, most of the time stay in the forest, you see, sleep in the spread of the grass. We sleep in a very good, you know, bed. But Buddha sleep in the spread of grass. So other people are enjoying all human beings are enjoying sensual pleasures, mingling with sensual pleasures. But he stay very simply, eat one meal a day, you know, then wear the robe, wear the same robe every time, you know, no hair, no need to to do hairstyle, different hairstyle, you know, no need to make up. So his life is so simple. And compared with other people, all human beings enjoy sensual pleasures. Buddha said, I do not envy. I did not envy them. And I had no delight therein. I have no delight in the sensual pleasures. Why? Why he has no delight in sensual pleasures? And why he did not envy human beings who are enjoying sensual pleasures, consumed by craving for sensual pleasures? Why?
Because Buddha knows the danger and had escaped from it.
Buddha said that
all defilement.
Okay, then Buddha answered that. It was Magandhiya. That there is this delight which apart from pleasures of the senses, apart from unskillful states of mind, which surpass divine happiness. Delighting in this happiness, I do not envy what is low, inferior, nor do I delight therein. You see the Buddha's answer? So good, you know? Why? Because why Buddha did not envy, you know, human being enjoy sensual pleasures? Because he find something which is more superior than enjoying sensual pleasures. That's why Buddha said that there is a delight which apart from pleasures of the senses, which is jhana, concentration, or vipassana, attainment of the noble one, or concentration. So concentration, he delight in the concentration which apart from pleasures of the senses. So when you practice concentration, you close your eyes, right? There's no eye contact, no ear contact, no nose contact, no tongue contact, no body contact. It's just the mind. Mind stay with the meditation object and find the peace. So this type of happiness and delight that he got this type of happiness and delight, which apart from pleasures of the senses, no need to rely on the senses. No need to rely on the eyes to see the beautiful form. No need to rely on the ear, hear the, you know, praise or the beautiful sound or sweet sound and so on. And that type of attainment, because he has that type of attainment also apart from unskilled state of mind. Let's say when your mind, you enter into, no need to say jhana, even you have some concentration, 5 minutes of concentration or vipassana, seeing impermanent of your thoughts, seeing impermanent of your senses and so on. Then at that moment, the mind is free from unskillful state of mind, unskillful mental state. That is something he delight in. That is something Buddha feel more superior than enjoying sensual pleasures. Because enjoying sensual pleasures give rise more and more to craving. And also it is unwholesome mental state. It make the mind uncalm, not peaceful. It make the mind in turmoil. But this concentration of vipassana, is free from pleasures of the senses and also free from unskillful mental state. And that type of happiness, Buddha said, surpass divine happiness, even surpass divine happiness, happiness in the Deva realm, not to speak the human realm, not to speak the happiness in the Deva, in the human realm, right? So delighting in this happiness means the happiness comes from concentration and vipassana. Then I do not envy what is low. Human sensual pleasures is very low and very inferior because it makes human being become more and more greedy and is also associated with unwholesome state of the mind. So I do not envy what is low, nor do I delight therein. Nor do I delight in human sensual pleasures. Okay, so this is the important, very important answer. Why we still pursuing sensual pleasures? Because it gives us satisfaction, right? And we do not see the danger of it. And we do not have the way to escape from it. Therefore, we indulge in the sensual pleasures. But Buddha already find a way. Buddha know the satisfaction. Buddha also know the danger, and Buddha find the escape. So he got the highest happiness than the human happiness. Then why should he envy for human enjoyment, for human sensual pleasures? Because he has the higher, more superior happiness. Okay, so I think time is up. I would like to end today's talk here. Then we will open for discussion.